Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to this week's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE, A Revolution of Gratitude, with your host, IC. Join us for a celebration of this season of Thanksgiving by immersing yourself in an exploration of gratitude. IC's guest is Darren Hollingsworth from Odinana Coaching and Consulting. Darren is a philanthropy coach who helps individuals find their passion, inspiration, and motivation through work based on gratitude, accountability, and encouragement. We'll also be experiencing a magical moment offered to us by Gatekeeper Jay that offers the opportunity to meet your shadows of gratitude. Next up, the Firefly Willows LIVE Roundtable is an opportunity for all of our hosts to come together and share their thoughts, experience, and insights on a variety of topics. Today's moderator is Heisey Ludmers with our topic, The Importance of Place.
By Mildred Lynn McDonald.
Hello.
Deb Caracella.
Good morning.
And John Caracella.
Hi there.
And our topic for this week's roundtable is the importance of place. And we often think about words like home or where we feel at home. And what I wanted to talk about was what or where feels like home to you. What kind of places have resonated for you where you feel most comfortable? And if there are any particular places or environments that you feel are a part of you or that you feel are you're a part of. And if you want to think of different sayings we have, you know, home is where the heart is. So it doesn't have to be a physical place a lot of times that we call home. Home may be some place that we always look forward to going back to. No matter where we go or how long we've been away, there's a sense of going back to. But sometimes home is someplace we end up going to, not where we grew up, but we end up finding home elsewhere. With environments and things, you have sayings like, you can take the person out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the person. So there's something about an environment or a place that just is a part of us, that we feel never separates from us no matter where we end up, and we always feel comfortable going back there. So I would ask each of you if there are places that have resonated for you in your lives that you feel a particular affinity or connection to, if there's any place that you feel you would call home in some way, whether it's geographic or energetic or internal. Is there anyone here that has a particular place or feeling or energy that they would feel they would call home? And what do you feel is the importance of place to you?
Well, I'm actually moved to share a saying, I think it's a Native American saying, that you're never really home until you're made up of the bones of your ancestors. And so if you think about what that means, it means that the continuity of place is such that your ancestors live and die and go back into the soil and fertilize the ground from which you harvest the food that you eat that nurtures and sustains you. And so, in effect, you are actually made up of the bones of your ancestors. I want to point that out because it talks to a characteristic of what being home might be all about, and that is that there's a vibration to a place that is so compatible with who you are that when you're in that place, you fall into resonance with it. It's comforting, not just comforting, but nurturing, right? It's a place that, in some sense, breathes for you, or it sings the song of your heart for you, so you don't have to sing it yourself. You're there. I mean, I know, like, when I'm in, first of all, when I'm in the country, and in particular in the country of my childhood in upstate New York, and on the land of my parents, there's a quietness that I can achieve. I don't have to do anything. I can just sit. I can sit in the living room, or I can sit on the front lawn, or walk in the woods and make no sound myself. And yet I feel like there's a song being sung that fits me perfectly. And, in, you know, and it can be a very quiet song. It could be a very still song. It could be the sound of the train down on the tracks, you know, 10 miles away that's rising up out of the valley, or the birds, or the crickets and the peepers at night. But the signature of that place puts me in a state of serenity, tranquility, peace. So it, the deep woods does the same thing for me.
So having grown up not that far away from where John grew up, I find that I resonate with the physical structure, the physical landmarks, the rolling hills, the green colors of the trees and the grass and the shrubbery, but I don't feel the same sense of connection any longer when we do travel back east and we visit with family and friends. The geography calls to me, but the vibration of the area no longer fits me. What I discovered was once we moved here to California, then I was home. I should have lived in California my entire life, is how I felt. And now, when we do travel, when we go anywhere, I'm very, very happy to come back home. I miss the places that I've visited. I enjoy my time there. I love seeing the newness and experiencing that location, but I'm very, very ready to come back to California, to the Bay Area, to come home, because this has become home. And traveling back to my childhood home does not feel that way for me any longer. Going home was nice, but it never really was like, oh, I'm back. I wish I didn't have to leave. I wish we didn't. And once I was away from there, vibrationally, I didn't have that same connection. It's just a sense of, I don't belong here anymore. This is no longer my place, which I did not feel as a child. As a child, it was very comforting. It was where I was. It was what I understood, and it was a good place. But once I moved away from there,
specifically to California,
that was, this is like, no, this is where I belong. This is where I'm. This is everything about where I should be.
And what we've heard from both of you is, whether it's home or just connection to a place, can be a resonance with an environment or a landscape, mm-hmm. rather than a particular place.
Exactly.
So it's feeling at home living in the woods, whether the woods are here or in Europe or someplace else, but it's living in the woods, mm-hmm. versus living in a particular mm-hmm. city or a particular state. So I think that that's also something that can often feel like home in a, maybe at a deeper level, is when we realize it's about particular environments or surroundings or geography that resonate for us, rather than being so fixated on trying to find that one place.
Yeah, I think that matches my sense of the vibration being key. There are places on the planet where there's a particularly strong characteristic signature vibration. And if you live in that place, if you grew up in that place, that is pretty deeply wired into your physiology and into your psyche, because it's a real thing. And if it's a power place, it's a real strong thing. So when you find a signature that matches that or is close to that, you're likely to feel the vibration in your body and in your soul, in your heart, in your psyche.
Well, for my home, it doesn't seem to be related to a particular geography in the traditional sense. When I think of home, the strongest sensation that I get is connection with my higher self, or an aspect of me that's bigger than I am and probably not in physical form. And it took me many years to figure that out because I would notice that everybody was attached to a piece of land or appreciated a piece of land or a piece of land was loving them back. And I never had that strong sense. I do have places on the earth that I resonate with in terms of they nourish me. The vibrational energy tends to fill up my gas tank again, or I very much appreciate the values or the people or the healing spirit. But it never gives me a sense of home, geography. So once again, when I determined that my ultimate home was my higher self, I had a huge sense of relief because at last, at long last, I had somewhere to push that feeling.
So that's, and you didn't feel as if you were missing something that other people seemed to have.
No, not at all.
Because you found the place, even though it wasn't an earthly place, you found the place. So the way that other people talked about their attachment to a particular piece of land or something, we can feel as if, well, I'm not feeling that anywhere, so I must be missing something. But when you found that yours was just higher, then that relief may be because you then started to feel as if, well, I'm not actually missing something that other people seem to have or are getting, versus I've now found that for myself, I was just looking too low.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to put it. Yeah, it was a huge relief, a huge release, and I found my geographic location. It just didn't happen to be in a physical form.
And I kind of feel that way too. And I'll ask each of you this, if you could just name one place or two places that you feel you would call home, whether it's a physical location, an energetic place, you know, or whatever. Like for me, I would probably say France, because I know the first time I went there, it's like I stepped off the plane and was like, oh, I'm home. But I would say France. I would say ancient Egypt. Obviously, I've never been to ancient Egypt. And I would say Japan, but it's really about old Japan. And I would say outer space, because, you know, I was always ready. If spaceship came along and the aliens asked me if I was ready to just leave everything right at that moment and go travel the universe for the rest of my life, I was gone. I wouldn't have any regret. I could just leave here in a minute. And even with the other places like ancient Egypt, et cetera, it's not about the physical place so much as it's the resonance with that energy of the thought, the culture, or just whatever it is around those cultures and places that is more so where I feel that even than the physical geographic aspect of it. Although there may be aspects of the geography, especially from the energetic side of things that you were talking about, John, but it goes beyond just building a house at a particular place versus it's something more resonant about that particular place is where I feel comfortable. And I wonder if anybody else has one or two places that they would say that they call home, whether physical or internal or energetic.
As I mentioned, the Bay Area, this section of California, definitely is a place where I feel at home. We had the opportunity many years ago to spend 3 months in England, and we were able to travel on the weekends in the English countryside. And that was also this is home. This is familiar. I have been here before, in a sense, because that little cottage right down the road, I could move right in there and I would know exactly what I needed to be and what I was like. And so I was very surprised that I felt so happy and comfortable there because I had never been there before. And it was like, wow, I could see myself living here for the rest of my life. And so it was surprising.
I have the woods in the Northeast in particular. But the woods anywhere, the deep woods anywhere, but in particular the Northeast woods is fantastic for me, very home. But also I'm at home when I'm playing in the surf. I'm also at home. And it's a different kind of home. It's not a passive kind of at home. It's an active kind of at home. But in the same way that I feel supported and nurtured and played with and on a cold winter night out under the stars or the moon. I feel at home?
I feel at home on either coast, either in Nova Scotia by the ocean, Cape Breton Island, or here in California. And as you were speaking, John, I could really feel what you were saying, and I realized as I was exploring the concept of home within myself is that the reason I feel at home on each coast is that they nourish my third eye. So I was feeling the energy of the Atlantic Ocean and the Pacific Ocean coming toward me and energizing this area. So thank you for that. And in terms of geography, I find that I tend to love a place that loves me back.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. If I feel welcome and accepted and understood or appreciated in some form, to me that's a place loving me, and that gives me that sense of home.
Your affinity for the coasts tunes me into a Celtic notion of the places of magic are the places that are betwixt and between the edges of things, right? So the coast is the place between the land and the sea. And so when you're there, the veils are thin. And as a very high vibration, you know, intuitive person that you are, it's not surprising that those are places that nurture you, and it's not surprising that that's where they nurture you.
Well, thank you.
It's a very Celtic notion.
Well, thank you, everyone, for participating in this, for sharing your thoughts and ideas and feelings around where home is for you. And as we enter into the holiday season, I would encourage listeners to just spend a little time thinking about, because we often for the holidays go home for the holidays, and I would encourage anyone listening to think about where you call home, what places are important to you, as well as what importance you put on place and places. And if you feel you have found your home, or if you feel that you are still looking for your home, and to always be attuned to allowing some place to resonate with you if it wants to, and when it does, tune into that and really recognize that perhaps you have found home for you. So thank you very much to everyone for participating.
Thank you, Icy.
Thank you very
and
much.
Join us for the rest of the show coming up. And next week's roundtable will be moderated by John Carosella as part of his show for Convergence. So until then, stay tuned, enjoy the rest of the show, and we'll be right back.
Thanks, Icy.
I'm going home to the place where I belong, and where your love has always been enough for me. Places and these faces are getting old. I said these places and these faces are getting old. So I'm going home. And I'm going home.
Hello. And welcome everyone to Firefly Willows LIVE and this week's episode of Revolution. Our theme this week is gratitude, so I've dubbed this episode A Revolution of Gratitude. I hope that all of you will be willing to be warriors with me in this revolution to bring gratitude to ourselves, to our lives, and to our world. A little later in the show, I'll be joined by Daring Hollingsworth from Odonata Coaching and Consulting. He's a philanthropy coach who helps individuals find their passion, inspiration, and motivation through work based on gratitude, accountability, and encouragement. Plus, Gatekeeper Jay will connect us with our own personal shadows of gratitude that reside within each of us. But first, I'm proud to welcome back to the show Bertita Graebner. Bertita will be offering us some insights into the cultivation of gratitude with some tips on how to put gratitude into practice in our everyday lives. Some of you may have enjoyed hearing Bertita on the show previously, and if you have, I will remind you, or if you haven't, I would like to introduce her to you. Bertita is a life coach with an emphasis on working with women aged 45 and older, and her goal is to bring voice to your ways and positive, intentional change to your days. You can contact Bertita and find out more about her work by visiting her on Facebook at Conversation with Bertita. That's B-E-R-T-I-T-A. So Conversation with Bertita on Facebook. And her name, Bertita Graebner. Her last name is spelled G-R-A-E-B-N-E-R. So thank you, Bertita, for joining us today, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Hi-C. I'm grateful to be here with you today and to offer some thoughts on gratitude. I'm drawing my readings from Living Life as a Thank You, The Transformative Power of Daily Gratitude by Nina Lesowitz and Mary Beth Sammons. Giving thanks for the opportunity to give. It takes a person of great heart to see the wisdom the elders have to offer, and so serve them out of gratitude for the life they have passed on to us. Ken Nerburn. Here is a gratitude practice. Reframe your thoughts on giving. When we think of giving, we often think of donating money to a cause. But we can give numerous other gifts, such as our time, our presence, and our caring. Consider where you give the gift of yourself. Consider where you can give the gift of yourself. Then think about the times you have volunteered your time and talent, and give thanks for the gift you received. Giving thanks for the opportunity to give. Reaching out to others fuels the collective power of gratitude. When we were children, many of us were schooled to associate saying thank you with obligation and even guilt. Our parents would say to us, "Say thank you to Grandma for the pajamas." Or, "When I was a child, I had to make my own toys from rocks and sticks. And look at everything you have that you take for granted." Many of us carried this idea of saying thank you as an obligation into adulthood. These memories can cause us to feel an underlying sense of resentment when we owe someone a thank you or feel that someone has not sufficiently thanked us. There is a not-so-subtle feeling of obligation. But ironically, giving and gratitude often take us by surprise. Often we find that it is in our own giving that we receive. When we realize this, we feel so thankful for the shift in ourselves, for the light that comes on in our minds, and the surprising sense of well-being we acquire through our giving. Sherry Zimmerman of Chicago helps us see how giving to others is a gift to ourselves, one we can embrace and be thankful for. Each week, Sherry Zimmerman volunteers at Little Brothers, Friends of the Elderly. The mission of Little Brothers is to enlist volunteers to bring friendship to elders who live alone or are in nursing homes. In many cases, their families live far away, or there are no living relatives, or relatives who can care for them. Many have outlived their friends and find they are physically unable to get out and find new friends, or participate in daily living, like going shopping, to church, and to the places they used to love. Sherry began her service by writing articles for the organization's volunteer newsletter, including a monthly feature titled An old friend is waiting that profiles an elder in need of a visitor. After a few years, Sherry became a visiting volunteer. The first elder she was assigned to was Loretta, a petite and alert woman in her 80s, who had outlived all but one of her friends and was almost completely blind from macular degeneration. She had one son who lived in another state, but was unable to visit her. Loretta was proud that he would call her once a week. "It surprised me that Loretta was so positive and lived for the moment," Sherry recalls. "She had been a painter, a singer, and a poet. When her vision was nearly gone, she gave away all her personal belongings except for some clothing, a few paintings, and her books of poetry, and then checked herself into a nursing home. I had to learn to approach her gently when I visited. It was easy to forget about her blindness, because you can't tell by appearance that someone has macular degeneration, and they can't see you coming. Eventually, the sound of my greeting would make her eyes light up, like she was looking right at me." Loretta told Sherry that her personal appearance was very important to her. Without sight, she still had the painter's vision and a sense of color. She dressed to the nines every day and was never without jewelry. Unfortunately, in the nursing home, an item of clothing that was sent out to be washed might not be returned. A different item might come back. She asked me to go through her closet to put outfits that matched on one hanger, Sherry says. I started visiting thrift stores to find pretty outfits for Loretta. One day, I asked her to come with me to shop. I wanted to help restore some sense of the power of personal choice. She had gone from total independence to being at the mercy of the nursing home staff and whatever charity came her way. We arrived at a large Salvation Army-type thrift store. I found an old metal folding chair and parked her at the end of the aisle, bringing her nearly new things to touch and feel, describing the color and pattern. While looking through the racks, I saw little kids running around, bumping into her and the chair and squealing. Seeing this, Sherry became concerned and thought the adventure was a big mistake. There she was, blind, probably not comfortable, unknown chaos and activity all around her. I asked her if she was okay and was shocked by her response. She said, "Sherry, just think. Here are all these parents who can't afford much at all. They can come here and outfit their entire family for just pennies. Isn't that wonderful?" Loretta passed away about 5 years ago. It was sad that we were the only ones at her burial besides a lady who was close to her from a church she attended and the manager of the nursing home. She had made all of the arrangements for herself. I was glad that she suffered very little at the end. Just a couple of days in the hospital, in ICU, with heart failure. Such a special woman. She spoke and lived by the phrase, "My attitude is gratitude." Loretta was a real joy. At her burial, Sherry read a couple of Loretta's poems. As the minister said the final prayer, Sherry thought of another lesson that Loretta had taught her when she said, "I feel that our prayers are stronger when we pray for others." Today, Sherry is still inspired by Loretta's writings. The poem which Loretta wrote in her 80s underscores the wisdom and depth of soul that she brought to those around her, a gift that Sherry will be grateful always for. Loretta's poem. What is a friend? When a friend says, "I need you," what do you say? Do you say, "What happened?" Or do you say, "How can I help?" Does it really matter what happened? Or does it matter only that your friend needs you, has asked for your help? God never asks us what happened. He says, I love you. I am your friend. The gratitude practice. Reframe your thoughts on giving. When we think of giving, we often think of donating money to a cause, but we can give numerous other gifts, such as our time, our presence, and our caring. Consider where you can give the gift of yourself. Then think about the times you have volunteered your time and talent, and give thanks for the gift you received.
LIVE is proud to support Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue, a nonprofit organization founded in 1981 by a small group of women in Sonoma County. These caring Good Samaritans took in orphaned babies and raised them for release back into the wild. Since then, SCWR has grown into one of Northern California's largest wildlife rehabilitation facilities, treating over 1,500 animals each year. The center is located just outside Petaluma, and consists of a hospital equipped for basic triage, a lab, pharmacy, and rehabilitation facilities. Volunteers are trained to take calls from the public, raise orphaned animals, help with hospital work, and provide feeding and care. Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue is dedicated to the rescue, rehabilitation, and release of sick, injured, and orphaned wildlife, and to promoting understanding and appreciation of wildlife through its education outreach program. Visitors are welcome on Saturdays at 2 p.m. for a docent-led tour. For information about current volunteer opportunities or information about what to do when you find injured wildlife, visit their website at www.scwildliferescue.org. To make a donation to help injured wildlife, go to the website's homepage and click the orange Donate button. And now, this tip of the week from Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue. Did you know that many wildlife mothers leave their babies unattended for several hours while they forage for food? Many Good Samaritans have called the center to report a baby they feel has been abandoned. But jackrabbits and deer leave their young behind when foraging for food. The babies are very camouflaged and remain quiet and still. Their parents won't approach if they can see you. For more information about our local wildlife, visit Sonoma County Wildlife Rescue on the web at www.scwildliferescue.org.
I'm drawing my readings from Living Life as a Thank You, The Transformative Power of Daily Gratitude by Nina Lesowitz and Mary Beth Sammons. Gratitude turns painful memories into precious gifts. A quote from Jean-Baptiste Messieurs. Gratitude is the memory of the heart. Gratitude practice. Try the Japanese gratitude practice of Nikon, which means looking inside. Practitioners claim that it helps people understand themselves and their relationships and put things into better perspective. The practice of Nikon involves asking yourself these three questions. What have I received from this person? What have I given to this person? What troubles and difficulties have I caused to this person? Gratitude turns painful memories into precious gifts. Gratitude comes naturally to some people. They see the glass as half full. But most of us have to cultivate that approach to life. We live in a culture where complaining is an art form and lack of appreciation a bad habit. Carrie Stein of Baltimore believes she falls into the latter group, but her desire to nurture an attitude of gratitude is sincere and honest. She has experienced how gratitude not only changes her outlook and mood, it truly changes circumstance. What seems at the time a horrible stroke of bad luck can become an event for which we are eternally grateful. Carrie Stein was 26 at the time and had just moved to Baltimore to take on a new challenge. She had been hired for her dream job as a producer for a network television station. Life was good. "I remember the day, shortly after I started the job," Carrie recalls. "I felt sick to my stomach. I had to go lie down in the green room and rest after the script was ready and we were about to go on air." She ignored the symptoms because she couldn't afford to take time off work. "And," as she said, "I was really enjoying myself. But it got so bad, I finally went to a doctor and found out I had a serious infection and needed to be hospitalized." Being new in town and alone, Carrie decided to return home to a hospital in Brooklyn, New York. "I spent the following week in the hospital, and my mother and father were by my side. We played board games, cards, talked about life. Afterward, during my recuperation, we shopped, relaxed at the local pool, and enjoyed each other's company. And once I was comfortable eating again, my father brought delicatessen corned beef sandwiches from my family's delicatessen. It turned out to be a special time in my life." But what made it even more significant and poignant than she could ever have imagined is that a few months later, her mother died of a heart attack. Had Carrie not been ill, she would have missed out on all those special moments she shared with her parents. She understood that she had been given the gift of time with her mom, her best friend. What appeared to be adversity became a blessing. As it happened, Carrie was not in Brooklyn the night her mother died. She had returned to Baltimore to go back to work. At 2 a.m., she received a call from her sister-in-law. Her mother, only 54 at the time, had died as she was getting ready for bed. "It was a crushing blow, and probably the most defining moment in my life," Carrie says. Today, 25 years later, thinking about the night still brings tears to her eyes. "But thinking about all those weeks the summer before my mother died makes me smile," she said. "It turns out that my infection was no accident or coincidence. It was a gift, a chance to spend uninterrupted time with my mother, to enjoy ourselves and bask in our love for each other. For that, I will be forever grateful." Gratitude practice. Try the Japanese gratitude practice of Nikon, which means looking inside. Practitioners claim that it helps people understand themselves and their relationships and put things into better perspective. Carrie Stein was able to find the gift in her situation. The practice of Nikon involves asking yourself these three questions. What have I received from this person? What have I given to this person? What troubles and difficulties have I caused to this person?
Thank you, Bertita. And Bertita will be back with us a little later in the show to offer one more practice of gratitude. Right now, I'd like to welcome my guest to the show today, Darren Hollingsworth. Darren Hollingsworth has had a successful career in sales as a financial advisor, a senior fundraising professional, and a nonprofit executive. Now, as a philanthropy consultant, he helps a variety of arts and social change nonprofits with leadership development and fundraising. Additionally, as a business success and philanthropy coach, Darren is passionate about helping successful professionals realize and exceed their professional and personal potential. He helps individuals find their passion, inspiration, and motivation through work based on gratitude, accountability, and encouragement. He encourages clients and others to consider how their lives can overflow into their communities through volunteering and personal philanthropy. He has recently launched a new series of podcasts, Working Gratitude, Real People, Real Gratitude at Work. Darren has worked to confront the myth of the work-life balance in favor of creating a blended life. So in addition to helping individuals and organizations move beyond surviving to thriving, he follows his passion for travel as a tour director, helping guests explore destinations in unique and adventurous ways. Darren lives in San Francisco with his best four-legged friend, Herbie the Love Pup, and he is an active community volunteer and patron of the arts. So please help me in welcoming to the show today, philanthropy coach Darren Hollingsworth. Welcome to the show, Darren. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be with you. I've really enjoyed the show so far.
And as you can tell, there were many people excited that you're here, cheering and clapping.
Exactly, right.
And I realized that with all of the cheering and everything, during your introduction, I forgot to mention your website and how people can contact you. And that is www.workinggratitude.com.
Mm-hmm.
And people can find out information about you as well as any contact information to get in touch with you is there as well, correct?
Absolutely. Exactly.
Excellent. The first thing I wanted to ask you about is I find your title for your company, in terms of the title for yourself, very intriguing because you say that you are the Chief Gratitude and Affirmation Officer.
That's how I show up for people, exactly.
Can you explain a little bit? I mean, who wouldn't want a title like that?
You know, when you go into business for yourself, there's lots of risks and there's lots of things to think about that you want to accomplish and achieve. And in an age where the C-level office, the chief information officer, chief operations officer, chief marketing officer, from my background in philanthropy, and the chief development officer, I really have been fortunate to have some good senior leadership level experiences, But I also wanted to be playful with my title and really help people understand what I'm here to do for their organizations and for individuals who embark on work with me. And gratitude and affirmation is really how I show up. And, you know, I heard Bertita say in one of her readings, you know, some people have come at their work or their life from a glass half full very naturally, and some people have cultivated that. And I think for me, I definitely have a blend of that. And so Chief Gratitude and Affirmation Officer just kind of rolled off my tongue as I was thinking of whether to put founder, owner, principal. I just liked it.
We have some friends, a couple who had their own PR agency for a number of years, and they actually did that with titles as well. Like the wife, her title on her business card was Empress of the Universe. And, you know, everybody in the company had titles like that. You had like the Princess of All Media and different things. And I'm actually curious, do you think that there might actually be a benefit for companies to consider being a bit more imaginative and playful like that in the titles that they give to positions and to people?
Well, I definitely think I've seen it in different, not I guess Fortune 500 companies maybe, but you know, Chief Imagination Officer. I don't know if that came, and I can't recall for sure, but I believe Disney or maybe Lucas. Someone has. I've seen that term, Chief Imagination Officer. So, yeah, I think it would be great because it brings a little bit of creativity and playfulness, as I said, into the workplace. And I think that all too often, first of all, titles can distract you from what you're there to do, which is, in the case of business, really deliver a product and a service for a value and for shareholder intentions and all of that. And it comes down to most people end up doing a lot of different jobs. But when you can just make that title playful or fully describing what you do, you know, because Chief Executive Officer really covers a lot of ground. So what else does that person do?
And maybe titles like that would help some people be a little less full and impressed by themselves.
I completely get it, and I think so too. You know, when you, I always get a smile when people read that business card, and if nothing else, that fills my heart. You know, it really keeps me in check. Am I showing up with gratitude? Am I showing up with affirmation? You know, I think another title that a friend of mine actually just tweeted and texted me is Disney Imagineers. You know, so they're not engineers; they're Imagineers.
Right. You mentioned your background, and I have to say, it seems like a very eclectic background when looking at like your resume. I mean, from financial advisor to working in a publishing company, to working at university and museum development, to president of the Liberace Foundation, even to tour director. Can you maybe just give a sense of what that journey has been like and how it's brought you to what you do today with the coaching and the gratitude?
Sure. Thanks for asking. I think for me, I have been on a journey of, you know, that's very different than, for example, my parents or people of a little bit more senior generation, where you get the job and you stay there for 30 years. I read recently that most people today in 5 years will have three jobs. Within a five-year period, they'll have three jobs. And my journey really has taken me through relationship building in a professional environment. I have built a sales career on building long-term relationships with clients rather than transactional relationships. The same thing with donors in the nonprofit environment. And then in leadership positions where I had staff that I was working with or a team that I was working with, just very, very important to me to build relationships. So the thread of continuity for my career has been building solid professional relationships. Along the way, the products or services or mission of the organizations that I've been involved with have differed. But the key element that's been consistent and that remains consistent even in my coaching and consulting work as well as in tour directing is building relationships that are mutually beneficial. I get the pleasure of taking people on tours, and one area of that is in the Grand Canyon. It's one of the most beautiful places that I can imagine on Earth. It's work because I am kind of Julie the cruise director for 10 or 12 people, and when you're put in that environment, it can be challenging. And so I have to bring personalities together that maybe never met each other under pretty rigorous circumstances, desert heat and cold water. And it's just part of what I do is bring people together. You can call it networking or connecting, but for me, it's relationship building, and that's the core of the career that I've built for myself and the way that I want to show up for people.
And I know you have quite a list of books and people and things that have influenced you, and I actually just wanted to ask you about a couple of them that jumped out at me.
Sure.
One was some of them I think are very familiar to people, such as the Secret or The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. But I was curious if you could talk a little bit about how the book 365 Thank Yous influenced you. It's by John Kralik.
Yes, John Kralik. And it's actually, he's re-released it, I believe, under the title Simple Act of Gratitude. So listeners may find it either way. I think you can still search or Google and find it either way. And boy, that book came to me at a really wonderful time, and it's just affirming to things that I had learned as a kid. My parents, and Bertita mentioned this in some of her comments, sometimes we come at gratitude because we were forced to. And my parents, if we got a $5 bill or I had an uncle who loved to give us $2 bills, if we got a $2 bill, we wrote him a thank you for it. And so I grew up writing handwritten thank you notes. And to me, the art of the handwritten note is kind of a lost art. I love handwriting, and I love seeing and reading people's letters, historic letters. So as I came to understand the value and the impact of gratitude, and then Kralik's book came out and talked about how he was down and out as a struggling attorney with some really difficult life circumstances, he kind of had a revelation to say thank you to people in both professional and personal life. And so he made a pledge to write at least one thank you note a day for 1 year. So they're in 365 thank yous. And it really was transformative in his life. As you read the book, his intention was really pure. He didn't realize that it was going to change his life, but it in retrospect, it certainly did and certainly has. And as I've heard him speak and be interviewed, he really continues to give testament to that. For me, in the professional environment, as a salesperson, I brought forward my parents' encouragement to write thank you notes. And I can tell you, I believe it closed sales. And I know from employers who hired me that when I wrote a handwritten thank you note after an interview, it was a discerning and distinguishing factor that got me jobs. And more than one employer has told me that.
And I think also, I recently read about a study that some people did with different companies, and they had the CEOs write handwritten thank you notes to employees, not just like to the top salesperson for a big deal, but it could be to the receptionist at the front desk or, just different people throughout the company, and not always for just a big thing, but it may just be for a small thing, like writing to the receptionist saying, thank you for always keeping the calls routed properly or whatever. And they found that by having CEOs do that, it increased productivity, not just morale, but also productivity in the company, and really shifted the environment. And I know that's one of the things that you sometimes talk about is gratitude as a shifter. And maybe
Absolutely.
You could talk a little more about what that means for you.
Yeah, I think, you know, some people hear me talk and they think, oh, he's full of gratitude. He's full of something that sounds like shift. But it truly can be. I've watched it as I've done the interviews for Working Gratitude and WorkingGratitude.com. I hear people constantly talking about when they bring a situation back to gratitude, it does create a shift and it helps refocus a difficult situation and open up a clearing, maybe to learn something from the situation. You know, you pointed out these companies that are taking that road to really retaining employees and motivating employees. I have gotten a lot of my insight about gratitude at work from gratefulness.org, a network for grateful living, and they did a summit in San Francisco in June, and there'll be another one in 2013. And one of the panels was professionals and business people who had helped create shift in their corporate culture, in their profitability, because of creating that sense of authentic gratitude, that the thank you notes were written to those people, as you said, a receptionist or a clerk, not a direct report even, but a peer, not somebody who necessarily did something specific that's part of an MBO or a goal for their performance evaluation, but simply a culture of gratitude, and it is shifting. It is shifting corporate culture, and those that are doing it, I think, are seeing return on investment. And really, the investment is pretty small.
Right. Yeah, really. A few pens, a card.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I, the book we were just talking about, too, I think also brings up a point that you also stress. So, you know, at least the original name of the book was 365 Thank Yous. And
right.
You talk about the importance of a daily practice of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Can you maybe elaborate on why you think doing it on a daily basis is important rather than just when somebody feels like there's someone or something to say thank you to?
Yes, I think as an like anything, to become a habit, it needs a practice. And so, for example, when I'm working with clients, I really have them commit to the first 3 weeks, at least the first 3 weeks of our work together, to the shifting power of gratitude. And it can be done through iPhone apps, through journaling. There's lots of different tools that you can use, just a list, like a task list. But when people start thinking about what they're grateful for at work, and for many, it may start with just, I'm grateful that I get a paycheck. You know, I'm grateful that I have clients. I'm grateful that they accomplished their task list. But once they start the process, the gratitude flows more easily to them. And I have seen over and over with clients and again with these interviews on Working Gratitude that people are able to build momentum from that. So you do it daily, and whether you do it at the beginning of your work day or the end of your work day or the beginning of your personal day or the end of your personal day, I'm an advocate for kind of keeping two lists, really. Keeping a personal gratitude list, thank you for family, thank you for friends, thank you for relationships, and then one at work, you know. And so wherever it's done, I'm finding and seeing evidence that people's lives are more content and more productive, and they're able to kind of get past some of the obstacles or hurdles by finding the little nugget of gratitude in it. And then if they can't get there, I ask that people just look, what is the learning that can come from a particular situation? And once you start to be more inquisitive and less judgmental about a situation and what there is to be learned, gratitude opens up pretty readily from there. And then when the gratitude snowball starts rolling, it really starts to overflow into other aspects of people's life and success.
And I think people, if they want, you know, start to do something like that, they can stress or overwhelm themselves because they think, oh, I have to come up with something to be grateful for every day. Like, it has to be some big monumental thing that they have to be able to identify every single day. And it's the little things that are also part of establishing that daily practice. If there isn't a big thing, then you know, just be thankful for something small, like, you know, I woke up healthy today. And I think it's the overwhelming.
I put my feet on the floor today. Right. You're so right, I see. It's just the little things. It's a list. It can be as easy as a small list, you know. And if it's a small list and there's three things on it, guess what? You were grateful today and you found something that gave you that shift that we talked about earlier.
Right. And you call, you know, your website and the podcast that you do is called Working Gratitude. Can you explain a little bit about where that title comes from and how you specifically are working with people? Like if somebody was coming to work with you, why would they come to work with you in terms of your emphasis and focus on the work environment?
And thank you for asking, because I wanted to play on words. I like words, if you can't tell. I love, you know, we talked about my title, and I really work with people to shift their language sometimes too. And it's more than just positive thinking, and it's more than glass half full, even. It's just really looking at the words we choose to use. So if we're doing gratitude at work, and so the kind of the subtitle to this is Real People, Real Gratitude at Work. So it's we're working it, and we're working out. It's like a workout. When you go to a personal trainer, for the first 15 minutes or maybe before you start your session, your appointment with them, most of them are going to tell you, do a few minutes of cardio to get warmed up. I look at gratitude at work and gratitude in my coaching work kind of like cardiovascular warm-up. For a person who has an appointment with me at, say, 4 o'clock, generally they've had an appointment that's run to 3:55, and they are busy people, and they start our appointment at 4 o'clock. So the gratitude may come from the call they just got off of or something that happened a different time in the day, but it's their shift to get to work on the heavy lifting of the other coaching work that we do together, or in the consulting environment even, in an organization that is looking to build relationships to raise long-term money to support the benefit of a given mission. When we start talking gratitude and start working gratitude, it just opens up. It provides clearing, and I find it really, really important. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm actually struck by the word you're using because of the work environment or the work context, because, you know, you have people who work the morning shift or the evening shift, and this would be something to encourage everyone to incorporate in their work day to work the gratitude shift.
Yep. Oh, I love that. I love that.
And it's just that little period in the day where they can shift into gratitude mode, but make it a regular part of the day, as just as they would, you know, I have to be at work at 8 for the morning shift kind of thing.
That is a illuminating insight, and I think if people can take that, we get lots of play there with shift, and we get, you know, take the working gratitude shift. Good insight.
Now, let us admit there are some people who would probably roll their eyes, hear us talking about this, and think, oh, aren't they a bunch of Pollyanny-type people, where the glass is always half full, et cetera. So, you know, what would you say to someone who is perhaps a single mother working two jobs just to feed her family, and how she is supposed to be able to cultivate an attitude of gratitude, if you will, and work gratitude into her everyday life?
You know, first I would just honor her and compliment her and meet her where she is, because I do not say this is, I call it work and working gratitude for the reason that it can be work at times to get there. If you're in difficult and challenging situations, I can completely acknowledge that getting to the point of gratitude may not be the easiest thing, but what I have to say to people is what so many authors and teachers talk about. If until you change the way you look at things, the things you look at are not going to change. And when you do change the way you look at things, the things you start to look at change. So when you can find a glimmer of gratitude, and for that working mother, it could very easily be the life and the joy and the beauty of those two children. If she's working that hard, she's doing it for those children. So the point of gratitude then, it doesn't start in the workplace. It starts at home when she tucks them in at night or when she wakes them up to go to school in the morning. And I honor that. And then if one of those two jobs, having the gratitude for it, even if it's just the paycheck, as I mentioned earlier, it can shift. It can create a shift. And I've seen it happen for clients who wanted to change jobs. Until they got to the point where they were thankful for the job that they have, and the whatever strengths and skills that have made them successful in the job that they have, be it public speaking, be it teaching, be it crunching numbers, when they find the gratitude for what they have and what they're doing, it becomes the opening to see how that can be applied somewhere else, and how they could use it in other aspects of their life and work.
And, you know, kind of related to that, especially thinking about the people that you've worked with as case studies, what do you think you might have seen has been, in a general sense, the most daunting obstacle or challenge for people to be able to come to a place of living in alignment with gratitude in themselves and on a regular basis?
Well, pretty consistently, I think, among my clients and among Working Gratitude interview guests, it's the state of the economy, and you can take that and run with it in lots of directions and how it's impacted different people. Self-employed people, it's obviously had the potential to present challenges for corporate people who have been downsized or outsized because of reorganizations due to corporate performance in this economy. There's a lot that has been an overarching theme that people have had to face. And those that I've been fortunate to talk to who have found a way, a glimmer, a sparkle of light in that glooming darkness that some people want to stay in. Honestly, some people want to stay there. I think you probably know that there are people, just like you said earlier, who look at this conversation with Pollyanna eyes. There's some people who just enjoy the darkness. But the people who can step into a little, step out of the shadows, I think you're going to address that a little later in the show, but who can really step out of the shadows and into a little bit of light with gratitude and have fun with it. You know, that's the other thing. It's having fun in this economy. I've seen that as a trend too. So maybe the next thing is beyond working gratitude. It's work and play, you know, or work and play. Because I think we take things a little too seriously sometimes.
So if somebody was feeling in that gloomy state and wanting to step out of that a bit into a lighter state, what might be one practical tip that you would offer them as a way to be able to start doing that for themselves?
I would say that literally, and to try to make it fun and easy, there are a couple of different apps on the iPhone, and as attached as we all are to our smartphones, it doesn't necessarily have to be an iPhone, but as attached as we all are to those, if that's something that you're comfortable with and you're already tapping and, you know, tweeting and Facebooking and texting, tap into a gratitude app and start to make a list, whether you're on public transportation or obviously not when you're driving, but the simple list of one thing, then two things, then three things. And if they can't find a point of gratitude at all, there's probably a bigger shift that needs to happen than gratitude can handle. If someone is in such a dark place in their life or their work that they have no access to this conversation, there's some other things I try to do with people, but that's one of the reasons I'm not everyone's coach or consultant. People need to find their peace with where they are, and be ready to move forward rather than stay stuck. And then that is when I think the gratitude work really starts to bring some additional momentum to a person's life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think it's similar, you know, because I work as a tarot reader, and and I think it's similar in that, you know, you're a coach and consultant. I'm a tarot reader. Neither one of us is necessarily a therapist. And so
exactly.
It's recognizing when some people need a therapist versus a tarot reader or a coach and consultant.
Right.
And usually they need the therapist when they can't necessarily find or see or feel a reason to move forward. And
right.
then when they're ready to move forward, they can come to people like us to then help
mm-hmm.
facilitate that process and give them tools to actually move forward.
Right. The mental health journey is one that I'm a huge advocate for, and I'm very clear that our society as a whole needs to take better care of ourselves in terms of and take the stigma away from mental health care. So I really do encourage people to explore all the many wonderful options that are out there for that level of care. And then when you're kind of getting to the top of your game and you want a little more, it's time to explore with somebody like you who can really give additional insights, or somebody like me who can hold people accountable. I think some people, the reason people engage with me is not unlike that relationship I mentioned before with a personal trainer. It's accountability. It's setting an intention and having someone stand with you in it and hold you accountable to what it is you say that you want. One of the other things that I would share with you that help people maybe before they can get to gratitude is defining it, what it is they want. People tend to talk so frequently about what they don't want. But once you make a shift of speaking about what you want, and then you start looking at what you're grateful for that you have, it becomes a good segue. And I think defining what you want may be the precursor to finding gratitude for it.
And speaking of definitions, we keep using the word gratitude and gratefulness mm-hmm. and living in gratitude. What would you give as kind of your definition of what gratitude and gratefulness and living in gratitude mean?
There's several, and it's interesting. I've recently looked at kind of the difference between gratitude and gratefulness. And gratefulness.org, by the way, has some good articles and insights about that, and I really do encourage listeners to check out gratefulness.org because there's just a ton of good insight there. And the root of the word, it's a fullness. I think the one word that I find that covers both gratitude and gratefulness is fullness. And then the expression of that gratitude is the overflow. It's when you are compelled, because you are so grateful, because you have such a fullness, that you're compelled to overflow into someone else's life by writing a thank you note, by saying the two simple words, thank you, by making a list. It's any outward expression of the fullness that comes with gratefulness. And a friend of mine reminds me that, you know, gratitude is not really something you do. It is an emotion and a state of mind. So to find yourself in that place with the thoughts that cultivate and stimulate it, it's just like joy and laughter and hope. They go together, and they're things that we have to think about and that we can get to. You know, you can make yourself smile by certain thoughts. You can make yourself feel grateful by having certain thoughts. And that's more than a brief definition that you ask for.
<That's>
you,
okay.
you get me talking about this, and I get really excited about it.
And you know, just before we came on the air, I was thinking about that question, what is gratitude? So I thought, oh, I'll use my tools as well. So I pulled a card from the Tarot as well as a hexagram from the I Ching, which is a Chinese divination system, just asking, what is gratitude? And, you know, the Tarot card that came up in the deck I use is called Sister Earth. Traditionally, it would be the Page of Pentacles. And on the one hand, a sister or a page card is a child. So it represents that idea of gratitude being something that we cultivate and come into by having that beginner's mind, that childlike perspective on the world, rather than the judgmental, adult, edited kind of mentality that we can get stuck in as we get older. And also, this is a card that represents adventure, like setting out on an adventure. So, you know, I think that that's a great thing to think about with gratitude, is be adventurous in how you express gratitude, but also gratitude is simply an adventure to find those things that you can be grateful for, rather than just looking at things and seeing them in one way. And that's where, like, you talk about finding the lesson in something rather than it just being something bad that happened.
Right. Making it playful is so important. One of my clients shared with me that once she put one of the apps on her smartphone, her kids were so curious about what she was doing that they have, I guess, a similar children's device. I don't know if it's an iPad or an iPod or whatever, but she put the app on their phone, and this particular app is from gratefulness.org, and it grows a flower. Every time you plant a seed of gratitude, it grows a flower, and then you can harvest a bunch of them. So it's playful. I love that insight that you just got from that, because it's so aligned with exactly adventure and making it adventure and make it playful.
And it's the suit of earth, and the earth is about doing something tangible, doing something you know, real in the sense of something physical and material. And I think that also speaks to the things that you've mentioned, you know, not just thinking about it, but then writing the note. And even the handwritten aspect gives it more of a tangible, physical feel and aspect. You know, so I was very pleased to hear you talking about it based on the card that had come up, because I thought how in alignment they were. And similarly with the hexagram that came up from the I Ching, it's hexagram number 19, which is called approach. But some of the concepts or aspects that are related to that hexagram are things like advancing or moving forward, which we talked about. That's what somebody has to be willing to do. You know, a warm reception, hopefulness, lightening up, which I think is the playfulness aspect, increased influence and prosperous conditions are also associated with this. So I think that's very much in alignment with the kind of work you're trying to do with people, because you're really trying to help increase their influence and their prosperous conditions.
Absolutely. I work with successful people who want to enjoy their success. You know, and I work with organizations that want to make an impact in the arts or in film or in any mission-driven organization. Your insights are directly aligned with who I am and what I do and the way I see this work occurring.
I think that we'll take a really, really quick, brief break, and then we will be right back. And I actually, when we come back, want to find out what somebody can expect in terms of, if they come to work with you, what kind of a process you do with them. So
great.
We'll be back in 30 seconds.
We hope you're enjoying this broadcast of Firefly Willows LIVE on Blog Talk Radio. For information on Firefly Willows, please explore our website, fireflywillows.com, or like us on Facebook.
And we are back, like I said, just a brief little break there.
Great.
And so, as I mentioned, as we went into that little break, I'm curious, if somebody was thinking of coming to work with you, what might they anticipate in terms of the approach and the process that you would take with them?
I have done this a couple of different ways. You know, much of my work is done on the phone, but when I had the opportunity to meet face-to-face with clients to start an engagement, and that's consulting or coaching, it's just important to me to have that connection so that I can learn facial expression and tone of voice and all of that. So that's one aspect of the start. I also take people through a couple of exercises and documents that I've put a lot of time and thought into, that I call my launch tools. Odonata is the name for the genus name for the dragonfly. And there's a lot of symbolism there, and people can explore that on my website, as well as looking at the symbolism of the dragonfly for a symbol of transformation and change. But one of the big things that happens in the evolution or the metamorphosis of the dragonfly is the launch. They crawl up a reed as a pretty ugly water bug, and then their wings come out, and the wings articulate in multiple directions so they can fly anywhere they need to go. And they launch. So I call my opening sessions, my opening work with people is our launch sessions and our launch documents. And one of the things I have people look at, because these are successful people who generally have resources and have high demands on their time. So we look at how they want to enjoy both of those more effectively. And I do some things that I call alignment ratings, and it's kind of like a car being aligned or not. You know, you can still drive a car whose tires are out of alignment, but the tires are going to wear poorly, and the ride may not be as comfortable. So we look at all the different areas of their personal and professional lives as to whether they feel like they're in alignment. And that's a pretty involved exercise of kind of self-discovery, and then we work through that in the first couple of sessions to really look at that. And then I just look at what tools people are using, they've already read, whether they've already had some good therapy and they're coming to me from a point of health and well-being, what books they've read so that I can offer. My approach to coaching, it is very consultative as opposed to some approaches that are really letting the client fully discover everything for themselves. I just feel like the people that have come to me thus far have enjoyed the consultative approach rather than their solo self-discovery. So that's the way we work, is you tell me where you are and where you want to be and where you want to go, with how much time you want to be spending at work, how much time you want to be spending in the community, what type of resources you want to draw to yourself to make yourself more successful financially, so that you can make more of a financial impact in the nonprofits that you want to explore supporting, or that you may already support, and with your time, but that you want to be able to invest in more readily. So it's an ongoing conversation of kind of all of those elements.
And from those conversations has kind of now grown your Working Gratitude podcast.
Yes.
And could you tell us a little bit about what that's about? And I'm curious as to how you go about choosing the people that you have on there, what kind of a message you're looking for, and what you're hoping to accomplish by doing those interviews.
Yeah, it came about a couple of different ways. On a personal level, as I've relocated to different communities, in order to find a sense of community for myself, I had this idea, kind of like Meetup, and Meetup helped me do this in one way, to just draw a group of people together to talk about for an hour, what are you grateful for? And as I developed a little bit of facilitator mindset for that, I kind of started with some of the questions that now have become working gratitude, which are quite simply, what are you grateful for at work today? What challenge have you faced at work or in your career that you can now look at with a lens of gratitude? And how is your gratitude overflowing your gratitude for your success overflowing into your community. So they started with conversations like that, and the way I decided to finally produce the podcast was I reflected on a television show that I liked and enjoyed for a long time called Inside the Actor Studio, and he always asked the same three questions. And so in a 10 or 12 minute interview, I asked guests those questions, and speaking to your question about who I invite on, I have been fortunate in my life and work to just encounter so many different kinds of people. And what's important to me about the conversation is that it's real, as I say in the subtitle, and that it comes from an authentic point of conversation. And so if I'm out and about in my travels and in my work with someone who really just has a heart of gratitude, I'll interview them, or I'll ask to interview them, and it's people that I've encountered in my travels. So I've interviewed opera singers, I've interviewed holistic practitioners and hypnotherapists, I've interviewed matchmakers, I've interviewed accountants, I've interviewed financial professionals, I've interviewed authors and speakers, and I really want to keep this conversation going with as many different types of people in as many different working environments, because there's a couple of things that happen. There's a thread of continuity that happens across working environments, that when you bring gratitude to the workplace or you acknowledge gratitude in the workplace, things change for you at work. And many of the challenges, as you asked me earlier, the insightful inquiry, is there a consistent one? The economy has hit so many people in so many different ways, but the way people have brought gratitude to that and have found gratitude in certain situations, even despite economic conditions, it's been hugely encouraging for me. So, and then people get to give a shout out to the charity or community initiative that they're most engaged in. And as a point of personal mission, that's very important for me, that we all are comfortable talking about what we are engaged in that contributes to the greater good.
Well, then I think that it's only fair that we turn the tables on you a little bit. We're going to pretend that you are now have come to New York and are sitting on a stage at a particular acting school. And I would also encourage anyone listening to think about these questions for themselves. But the first question I would like to ask you, Mr. Hollingsworth, is what are you grateful for at work today?
Well, I ask this question a lot, and it's really kind of fun to be asked it. My gratitude really has many facets. For clients that are willing to invest in themselves and do the work, and the gratitude comes for simply having that business, but also for being a part of that transformation in their lives and that opening and clearing in their lives. It fills me personally and professionally, and I'm immensely grateful to be a part of that. And I'm grateful that these podcasts are getting some attention. I've gotten acquainted with some of Oprah's new own ambassadors, and they're tweeting a lot about work and gratitude, and it's kind of fun to think that people that are connected to Oprah are hearing about these things. But it's more important to me that I'm grateful that the conversation is getting disseminated and distributed far beyond channels, and I'm grateful for you, for example, the way you came to know me through social media and mutual acquaintances. I just want this conversation to be perpetuated, so I'm grateful any time that I get to share that.
And what challenge have you faced at work that you can now see through the lens of gratitude?
In the conversation that you and I had earlier off the air, you really helped me find something that is a longer-term challenge for me. That came from challenges of childhood, of having a father who was ill much of my life and passed away when I was 19. And I think I had a sense of urgency always for getting things done to help make things easier at home for mom and dad, or to ultimately, really, there was a sense of getting things done before he passed away. And that has served me, while it was a huge challenge as a kid, to have your dad go in the hospital every 6 months. The things I've learned from it, I can truly be grateful for, that I've learned to be resilient and to, kind of like the dragonfly, lives a very short life and makes the most of that. I have learned to find the gratitude in situations that are challenging, and even looking back to all those challenges that have inspired my work, and some of which I had to work through. I mean, I had some workaholic tendencies, so those were real and significant challenges, because it was like my medication, my self-medication was kind of workaholism, and through some really good therapy and some good pharmaceuticals administered properly with physician's care and good therapy, I came through all of that, and I can look at that truly with a lens of gratitude.
And today, how do you find that your gratitude overflows into the community around you?
Well, there's a couple of ways. Professionally, building connections with and for people that really don't have direct client impact for me. I love introducing people that need to know each other and find each other. But there are two organizations that are top of mind for me that bridge my personal and professional life, really. One is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I did last June their Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk as an expression of my gratitude for my own survival of troubled times in my life and the mental health awareness. And AFSP does a lot of research and prevention work for suicide across many audiences, gay, lesbian teens, to military, to all sorts of people who face challenges and who survive, who are left behind by people who've completed suicide. So I'll continue to walk for them and raise money for them and be an advocate for mental health. And then another broad-reaching organization that I've gotten acquainted with recently is the Social Change Film Festival and Institute. And there's a lot that can be said about the importance of filmmakers giving voice to social activists, and a medium that now has no boundaries, really, because people can stream film and visual messages online. So those are two that I dedicate some time and energy and work to, and I hope that people will take a closer look at.
And can you give us the websites for both of those?
Sure. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention is simply www.afsp.org, the initials of the organization, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And then the Social Change Film Festival is simply socialchangefilmfestival.org. So I hope people will take a look at both of those.
All right. And then my final question, which is along the lines of the Inside Actors Studio, because I ask it at the end of each interview.
Mm-hmm.
I will ask you what question you would like to ask my next guest without even knowing who they are, but what you would like to hear them respond to.
Well, you can probably imagine that for me that question is, what are you grateful for in your work?
Okay. And then the previous guest, their question for you was, what do you think would be some of the benefits of doubt and uncertainty that a person experiences in life?
Benefits of doubt and uncertainty. I think reflecting on where the doubt and uncertainty has come from, coming to an awareness of when that is present, kind of immediately loosens the power of doubt and uncertainty when you can just acknowledge it. So having it can be a nice circle of coming back into a point of being really present in a given situation. What is causing the doubt, the uncertainty that can lead to the fear? What thoughts have come there? So I think that would be useful in making use of or looking at doubt and uncertainty.
All right. Well, Darren Hollingsworth, thank you very, very much for having chosen to spend some time with us today. I know you have guests and everything, so I am eternally grateful for you having been willing to take a little bit of a time out of that visit to talk with us.
It's been delightful. I really enjoyed the show. Before we started talking, the roundtable about home really hit home at this time of year, going into the holiday season, which, you know, it was great. And then Brigitte's insights and readings were just wonderful. So thank you for letting me be a part of today's show.
And I will just remind listeners that if you want to find out more about Darren and his work, you can visit his website at www.workinggratitude.com. And so thank you very much, Darren. And we will now move into our next segment of the show. Actually, Bertita is going to rejoin us, and she has one more little practice of gratitude to share with us. And that will be followed by our magical moment, which will be a meditation led by Gatekeeper Jay, who's going to give us some tips as well as take us on a little bit of a journey to meet our own internal shadows of gratitude so that we can see what those are and integrate those into ourselves. So stay tuned for that. We will be moving into that right after this.
Experience what really matters. A quote from Eric Hoffer: "The hardest arithmetic to master is that which enables us to count our blessings." Gratitude practice. To truly practice gratitude, say thank you for challenging experiences, for people who have hurt or betrayed us. Send them light. Forgive them. It's not your fault. Count your blessings, as by blessing we are blessed. And move on. Experience what really matters. Sometimes people we trust are the very ones who disappoint us the most. We want to curse them and ourselves for not reading the signs, not getting it that the person was not a friend, but a foe. But we can't go there. We need to look to those who teach the lesson that there are givers and then there are takers, that in trusting we should be grateful for the soul of ourselves that is open, trusting, and believes in others. That's the good news in betrayal. We need to give thanks to the part of us who cared and let go of those who have yet to receive that blessing. Anne and Jill Roberts share their experience in moving on and giving thanks for lessons learned. As Anne Roberts remembers it, the year 2007 started with all the hope, promise, and optimism only new beginnings of January can bring. Anne, who owns Access Elevator Supply in Emeryville, California, with her husband Joe, was looking forward to the promise of prosperity and what lies ahead. But by the end of the month, her family's lives were shattered after they discovered that an employee they had promoted to general manager over a career of 10 years had been embezzling from the company for 6 of those years. Anne was devastated. Trusts, loyalty, both were betrayed. The employee had come to them highly recommended by industry peers. She had gained their trust with her hard work, drive, talent, and initiative. In hindsight, we never should have given over that much control to anyone, Anne says. This employee systematically gained our trust and took over functions of our company that would give her access to the money coming in. Of course, she was the first one my husband turned to when we were trying to uncover what was going on. We later learned that she had five ways she used to steal from us, and the amounts were high, very high. All employees were in a state of shock. We all had been fooled. To the credit of our employees, our customers never knew what was being uncovered that year. Because the industry is small and she was well known by those calling our office, the word did get out eventually. Everyone was shocked, and all the employees were a tremendous help at that time. Due to the numerous ways the thefts were carried out, the company will never have conclusive numbers for the loss, but they estimate it was close to $350,000. So how does one find gratitude in this situation? Anne is grateful for the people who helped prosecute this employee and make her accountable for her actions. She is grateful for the lessons this experience taught her as she learned how to peel away the anger, hurt, and betrayal and deal with only the facts. She came to the realization that there is something very refreshing about dealing with just the known. Reflecting on the experience, she says, "We tend to wander amongst the unknown, and that is a dangerous place to hang out. I appreciate the moment much more because I experienced how quickly things can change. I am grateful for the ability to identify what is truly important and realize that money is never associated with those things. Thus, I am grateful for true friends, a loving, compassionate family, and the natural beauty that surrounds us every day. Even a storm at sea is beautiful when viewed through the window of safety." Anne has learned that gratitude is something that cannot be imposed on others. It must be heartfelt. And as feelings are self-generating, one usually learns gratitude through life experiences. We learn some lessons from negative events, but they can be a tremendous opportunity for growth. Anne and Joe Roberts have learned to focus with gratitude on the many blessings in their lives. Gratitude practice. To truly practice gratitude, say thank you for challenging experiences, for people who have hurt or betrayed us. Send them light. Forgive yourself. It's not your fault. Count your blessings, as by blessing we are blessed. And move on.
Our magical moment portion of the show. And today I am joined by Jesse Johnston, who is perhaps better known as Gatekeeper Jay. He is a high priest in the Green Man tradition, which is part of a larger organization called Come As You Are Coven, or also known as Kaya. Gatekeeper Jay has joined us to lead us in a meditation to help us connect with our inner shadows of gratitude, and also to offer some practical exercises that can aid us in cultivating and living in an everyday state of gratitude. So welcome, Gatekeeper Jay, to the show, and thank you for offering to share your wisdom and process with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I do want to let listeners know that there is a guided meditation in this segment. So if you happen to be listening to this show in your car, I would encourage you to engage in the meditation perhaps at a time when you are able to find a quiet, safe, and non-moving space in which to do so. And with that being said, Gatekeeper Jay, I'm wondering if you might be able to offer us a little insight into the impetus for this particular process that you're going to be sharing with us.
Thank you for having me here. I'm really happy I have the opportunity to help other people with something that I know I've struggled with. Gratitude is not the easiest thing for me to think about or be mindful of on a regular basis. So I think being able to explain what it means to me and my point of view on it, and then offer a meditation around finding the things within yourself that you're grateful for and bringing them to a conscious level so that you can work on being more mindful of how you're grateful for pieces of yourself. And then I wanted to go over a couple of simple exercises that you can use to begin your journey on the path of gratitude.
And if I can just jump in here for a second, one thing I might like to suggest for people, if you'd like to have something physical or tangible that you can use during this meditation, which could also be something that you can carry with you, then perhaps you might consider a stone or a crystal that you can hold in your hand while doing this meditation, which can be charged with the energy and intention of gratitude from the meditation. Then that stone is something you could carry with you in your pocket, and anytime you reach in and you feel that crystal in there, it can serve as a reminder to you to be in gratitude for something in that moment. Or perhaps if you're in a situation where you're finding it difficult to express or find something to be grateful for, then you can reach in and hold that crystal, and it can help to stimulate the energy of gratitude to help you find what you can be grateful for, even in the most difficult circumstances. Some crystals that I might suggest for this would be carnelian, aquamarine, hiddenite, emerald, lapis lazuli. These are all stones and crystals that have an energetic signature that really is strongly related to gratitude. But I would also certainly suggest that if you happen to pick up a stone or a crystal and really connect with it, regardless of what it is, trust that connection, because that's really your intuition and that stone trying to indicate to you that it's the best one for you in that moment and for the right purpose. So, Gatekeeper Jay, hopefully you can pardon this little tangent. Sorry to have interrupted, and I will now let you continue.
I recently discovered that gratitude is not something that's easily attained, especially on a regular basis. I've watched some friends, I've watched some mentors find their way to a place of gratitude, and I've seen how it can improve their lives. It brightens it, it makes them happier. Gratitude helps to keep us from taking things for granted. By being mindful of the things that we have in our life, even the very fast-paced, kind of disposable way in some of us live, this kind of consumerist society, we don't stop often enough to think about how grateful we are to have that piece of literature or that new phone or gadget that makes our lives easier. For me, gratitude has always been a way of expressing my thanks to somebody else for something that they've done that helps me, whether they realize they've done it or not. To me, it's always been important to take the time out of my day to let somebody know how much what they've done means to me. I've had other people who've done that to me, and I've never realized how much it affected the other people that you deal with on a daily basis. That moment of acknowledgement, of kindness, of mindfulness that brings you back to that moment and centers you in that place helps to form a connection with the person that you're speaking with. That's really important to me, especially in the middle of a busy day. That moment of grounding, coming back to self, and being in the moment. For me, that's one of the things that gratitude really offers. It offers me a way of looking back at things that may have happened in the past that may have been traumatic or not necessarily the happiest moments in my life. But looking back at those moments and realizing what I have walked away from those moments with, what I learned from those moments, by focusing on those and being grateful for the things that I learned, attained, how I grew, changed those memories that could have been harmful, detrimental, or painful just to hold on to into something different. For me, gratitude allowed me to let go of the negative connotations to some of my memories, the baggage, and hold on to the really core lessons that I've learned from those things in my life. A really good example of that, a little over 2 years ago, I had facial reconstruction for a chronic medical condition. And the person that was the most important to me in the entire recovery process was a Latina cleaning lady that I met in the hall at about 4 o'clock in the morning. My jaw was wired shut. I was on painkillers. I had to get up and walk, which is a very common practice after somebody's had surgery. My first trip out of the bed, my mother was sleeping on the bed next to me. My husband at the time was sleeping in the waiting room. And I got up very painfully using the IV pole as a crutch and wheeled myself out into the hall with just the simple goal of walking around the hall once and then back. And after I made it halfway down, I was in so much pain and I was so overwhelmed with not being able to open my mouth. I couldn't even cry because the pain was just too great. My jaw was wired shut. My nose was all stopped up. It was a pretty horrible moment. And then around the corner appeared this little lady with a mop bucket. And she looked at me and said in broken English, "Don't worry. Keep going. It will all be okay. This is just the beginning. You can do it." That is the person I am most grateful for through the entire process, because at a moment when I was at a breaking point, they came to me and offered me that moment of grounding, of centering, of balance, and of being in that place. And they gave me good advice. They helped bolster my spirits. So rather than paying attention to all the money, all the pain, the heartache and drama and recovery and all the things that you have with major surgery, that one person changed my entire perspective. Those memories now, whenever I think of them, I think back to her, and I'm eternally grateful that a stranger came up to me and offered me that advice. It makes it a lot easier to look back on things when you're happy and grateful about them, and you hold on to the good bits. With this in mind, I'd like for you to take a moment, close your eyes, and think about all those things that you're grateful for. All of them. Whether they're silly things or serious things, the things that just pop off the top of your head, or the things that you have to think about really, really deeply. Now that you've had a moment to think of these things, and your mind is in a place of gratitude, I would like to transition to the meditation. Please find a comfortable space. Close your eyes. Take three deep breaths. Good. You hear birds singing. You can feel the sunlight playing across your skin. It's a warm glow. It's a slight flower-scented breeze blowing against your face. Perhaps you can hear a small brook not far away. Beneath you is a nice, smooth, firm, rocky surface. As you open your eyes and squint slightly in the sunlight that's streaming in, You see around you a field full of wildflowers, with trees in the distance, butterflies flitting from flower to flower. You realize that you're sitting on a large flat stone in the middle of a field. You can feel the sun beating down on your right side. As you gaze around and see the clouds overhead, very thin, wispy clouds, you notice your shadow as it moves slowly in counterpoint to the sun. And the sun rises higher and higher, and as it reaches directly above you, it stops. As you gaze in front of you looking down, you now have six shadows, reflections of parts of you. As you reach out to whichever of these shadows seems closest to you, and you touch it, it's cold, but not the cold of ice, more the cold of a cooling, soothing bath after a sunburn. It's cool in the way that it belongs as a part of you, but it's not a part that is often seen in the light of day. This shadow that you touch first, with its velvety smoothness, this shadow is a reflection of a trait in yourself that you are grateful for, that you have always been grateful for. Take a moment. What does the shadow reveal to you? Once you've had time to process, lift your hand away from the shadow and hold it a couple of inches above it in acknowledgement, and simply say, thank you,
thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you,
thank you. Now move your hand to the next shadow, the one that calls to you. As you put your hand forward and touch the shadow, it feels much the same as the last, though in a strange way, darker. This shadow represents a trait in yourself that you may dislike, but has served you in the past. What does this shadow reveal to you? What does it tell you that you need to be grateful for? Take a moment and listen. And then with that knowledge, move your hand away from the shadow a couple of inches and simply say, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. As you turn to the next shadow, whichever of the remaining calls to you, place your hand upon it. Feel its smooth surface. This shadow represents something outside of yourself that you have always been grateful for. What does this shadow reveal to you? Take a moment to listen as this shadow tells you what you are grateful for. With that knowledge in your mind, lift your hand away from the shadow a couple of inches and say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Now turn your attention to whichever of the other shadows calls to you. This shadow represents something that is outside of yourself that you do not like, but in some way serves you. As you place your hand upon that shadow, what does that shadow reveal to you? What knowledge does it share? Take a moment with that knowledge in your head, and raise your hand from the shadow a couple of inches and say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Of the two remaining shadows, whichever catches your eye, place your hand upon the cool surface. This shadow represents the traits of a person you are grateful for in your life. What does this shadow reveal to you? What knowledge does it impart? Take a moment, lift your hand a few inches above the shadow, and say thank you.
Thank you.
As you turn to the final shadow, you lay your hand upon the cool, smooth surface. This shadow represents a person that you did not like at the time from your past, but it taught you some important lesson that you never understood until recently. What does this shadow reveal to you? What knowledge does it impart? As you take a moment, raise your hand and say thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
As you do so, these six shadows slide together as one in front of you. Remember all those things that you need to express your gratitude for that have been revealed to you. These are all reflections of yourself. Things within you that you may not have taken the time to examine. With that realization, the sun begins the rest of its journey, and as it travels across the sky to the other horizon, this shadow self reaches up to embrace and become a part of you where it was and always will be. As the sun sets and you absorb this information, feel the temperature slowly drop. Hear the night insects begin to chirp. Feel a slight breeze pick up. Close your eyes and gather yourself back to this place in reality, and your consciousness flow back into your body. Take three deep breaths. And as you breathe out the final one, feel your fingers and your toes return to your awareness. And as you're ready, open your eyes. Here are a few simple exercises that you can use on a daily or regular basis to help you focus and keep gratitude in your mind. First, I would recommend writing letters of thanks on a regular basis, handwritten letters of thanks to people, be they coworkers, friends, family, whoever you're actually grateful for. Second, think of a time during the day where you have a natural transition. Take a pause in that place every day and out loud say five things that you're grateful for, and then continue on with your day. And the last one may sound like the easiest, but I know that it's not. I challenge you for this one. Every day, look in the mirror at yourself and say, I am grateful for who I am and who I can become.
I'd like to thank Gatekeeper Jay for having joined us today, and I hope that what he's had to offer you is something that you have found both inspiring as well as practical, and something that you can start to incorporate in yourself and in your life on a regular basis. And I would encourage you to try and start tomorrow with some of these exercises, because the sooner you start, the quicker you will realize you have developed a way of being in a state of gratitude all of the time, rather than feeling that it is a struggle to find things to be grateful for. So thank you very much, Gatekeeper Jay, for having joined us.
Thank you for having me.
And stay tuned. We'll be right back. That brings us to the close of our show for this week. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And I'd also like to extend my gratitude to my guests this week, life coach Bertita Graebner, philanthropy coach Darren Hollingsworth, and Gatekeeper Jay for sharing their wisdom with us. Just as a reminder, for more information or to contact Bertita Graebner, you can find her on Facebook at Conversation with Bertita.
for more information or to contact Darren Hollingsworth, you can visit his website at www.workinggratitude.com. And for more information about Gatekeeper Jay and the Come As You Are Coven, you can visit www.kayacoven.org, which is CayaCoven.org. I'm your host, Hi C, and thank you for listening to Firefly Willows LIVE. You can find out more about upcoming shows as well as listen to past shows by going to www.fireflywillows.com/live. And until next time, I challenge you to start a revolution of gratitude in your life and in the world.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. Join us next week for Convergence with host John Carosella. John talks with Randall Paul, founder and president of the Foundation for Religious Diplomacy, and Brian Hall, director of the new film Unresolvable, about a compelling new way to heal the wounds of religious intolerance. In addition, John will share insights on walking with a Celtic spirit known as the Bone Mother, gathering the bones of all the wild things that have died in November, the twilight of the year. John also hosts next week's roundtable. When the evangelist comes knocking, how do you answer the door? Tune in for that and more next week on Convergence. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Firefly Willows LIVE, Blog Talk Radio.